it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
That's a real shocker, Steve. The idea that inflation is so much weaker than anticipated. That's a real shocker, Steve. The idea that inflation is so
well, you dropped it. There you go. There's CNBC says that inflation is going down a little bit. Is that what they said there?
It's a real shocker, Steve. Annie.
What was I just listening to recently? And there it was a congressional hearing. I think it might have had to do with the UFO stuff, but there was somebody being questioned named Wiggins.
No.
And every, like, this person was questioning here and questioning there, and every time she'd go to Wiggins, they'd say Wiggins. And I was like, I think maybe we should throw that in the show. But yeah, that just happened. So some numbers came in. I want to start the show off with this because, let's see, Ryan, you're taking Thursday and Friday off?
Mm-hmm.
Your suspension is kicking in?
Everything I've ever done is mounting up into Thursday and Friday.
He appealed the suspension. It was originally a week, but he appealed it, got it down to 2 days, and it's Thursday and Friday. He's got to go to Wisconsin.
I got to go to Milwaukee with my friends.
No friends. We're just sending you to Wisconsin to think about what you've done.
As long as it's near the Dells.
Can you fix anything in Wisconsin while you're there?
I'm not going to fix elections, if that's what you mean, because I'm a Republican.
I am from Illinois, and I'm here to help. The inflation numbers come in, and I am always, this is when I tend to watch these networks the most, like the CNBCs of the world, just to watch them react to information when it comes in. You do have to have a little context to how they report things normally to kind of fit it into the context of like if they're reacting in a specific way. But I think, and I'll ask you this question here after we get done listening to this clip, Ryan, but I think that we need to discuss in greater detail, probably with some experts on the show, how bad, not the Joe Biden numbers were, but how bad they lied about him. Here, this is from today.
There's the exporter, there's the importer, and there's the consumer. Mm-hmm. And so far, the consumer is carrying the least of the burden. I can tell you what's going on right now in companies is they're going product by product, going through the elasticities, what they think the consumer can absorb in terms of price increase without destroying demand. Mm-hmm. And they're finding out that they cannot pass through as much of the price increase as they want.
So what you have CNBC reporting there is that the tariff implementation, while some of the numbers of dollars that are coming into the United States due to these tariffs, it's jaw-dropping. And what we're hearing here on CNBC is that the exporter and the importer are the ones carrying the burden. Mostly, well, the importer, through the tariff position that Donald Trump has put into place, the consumer is carrying the least of the burden of what Donald Trump has implemented. And you're seeing an enormous amount of income in the United States. And if you've paid any attention, and my ears always perk up when I hear this, Donald Trump's like, yeah, I'd like to eliminate income tax for people who make, I think the number is usually $200,000.
It's around there. 150 has been floated.
And I don't think that's household. I think that's individual income.
That's pretty good.
So, you know, are we on that path? I don't know. Is this sustainable? Is this just replicable with every year that this is just the new way of things? I don't know. But what we're told over and over and over again is who pays the tariff? And the Democrats specifically told us the consumer. And today they're like, ooh, that's not really how this is going.
And this is exactly what the Trump administration anticipated. And that will not get reported because they've been saying this the whole time. We're going to do tariffs. It will be mostly absorbed by the companies and by the nations involved. And this is why all of these countries are fighting it so hard, because they know it hits them.
The other part of this, too, is the industry that is being brought back to the United States. Now, I feel like what we're peddling in right now is a lot of promises, a lot of commitments, because you can't be like, we're going to invest $1 billion in the United States. And then there's a building and there's hundreds or thousands of jobs. These are longer term implementations that are going to have to be stuck to in order for us to reap the benefits of. But I'll say this as well. I've talked so much about reshaping culture in the United States to value once again the work you put in for what you get out. That's a huge deal. But a lot of what needs to be implemented in order for us to see the plan through all the way. Because if Donald Trump has a plan that's going to take, let's say, 6 years to fully prove itself, if it gets implemented on day one, he still is relying on somebody else to get elected in a nationwide general election to stick to the plan. Because as we've seen Donald Trump do to so many Joe Biden executive orders, day one of a Democrat presidency in 2029, poof, it's all gone. I think that's one of the main reasons. This is not rocket science. I'm not a genius for identifying this, but the reason to go so hard so fast is because they need as much runway as possible to get these things off the ground in a way that shows the American people we have solutions. We have ideas. Not, I think that's like an interesting, isn't it an interesting concept in government to elect people who have ideas and, I'll say it, the balls to implement them. The last administration, love him or hate him, everything he did was a political reaction to the moment. Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, the wind could shift at any given time and they would shift positions on things, go all in, and then all of a sudden back all the way off. There was nothing about the last administration that was definitive other than we want to run in the direction of what looks like socialism. I was listening to Kevin McCarthy on Outnumbered just before this show started, and there's a lot of talk out there right now. I guess Kamala Harris is on a book tour.
Yeah.
Have you read her book?
Yeah. Loved it.
Changed your mind?
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. I read a Stephen King book recently.
Oh, they get confused all the time.
It was around.
Horror. Yes.
It was horror. Yeah.
Horror. Yes.
It was about a nation in decline. Scary.
All Stephen King is doing is just the Democratic National Committee's platform.
But I walked away from it knowing that I'm probably a racist.
That was the foreword.
Right.
Kevin McCarthy said on Outnumbered, he goes, Kamala Harris spent $1 billion in a month or two, whatever, trying to get elected.
180 days or whatever that is.
Sure.
107.
He said, 107. You can't name three things she would have done if she would have gotten elected.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's rough.
Let's test the theory here right now. Name three things that, and I'm going into this conversation by articulating that Donald Trump came in with wild ideas. The tariff implementation was a wild idea that wasn't even politically blessed within his party. Steve Moore, who's on our show on Mondays, most Mondays, if I ask him about tariffs, he goes, Annie, you know I'm not a tariff guy. I'm like, you say it every time we know it. And he'll still say that, but he'll also acknowledge the fact that some of his biggest fears about the tariff implementation haven't come to be yet. And we were told the sky was going to fall. You remember what was it, Liberation Day?
Mm-hmm. April 2nd.
April 1st, because he thought that was unlucky.
That's right.
Can you end the leader of the free world's like, I think we should change the entire structure of our American government, but not on April 1st. That would be ridiculous. So he's got this idea to go do something like this. And even people within his own party are like, gosh, I don't know. If I look at my 401k way more than I should, but I just like to monitor it. I'm trying to learn it as I go. I want to know what the ups look like so that I know what the downs look like, or the stock market or whatever. It's really interesting to look at a year or maybe the year to date. You can pick out where Liberation Day was. You remember all the people who were pulling their hair out going, how's your 401k doing now? Because it dipped for a minute there. My 401k is better than ever. I'm here to say right now, a round of applause, because that portion of the economy is doing great. That is it not obvious? I mean, it seems obvious to economically ignorant person like myself, that's why we have experts on, and Ryan.
Thanks.
I was actually meaning that to be a compliment. It didn't really come out that way. I know that you follow these things. I truly, in my heart of hearts, was trying to say something nice about
you. I halfway believe that.
It's like my heart won't even allow it.
Yeah, your heart will go on.
Next poll question. Would Annie have let Ryan on the headboard in the ocean? Do you know that? What's his name? Cameron. James Cameron.
Candace.
Yes. Do you know that Candace Cameron? Deej. Do you know that James Cameron got so sick of hearing people talk about whether or not Leo could have fit on there that he ran a test and made people get in frigid cold water?
I just learned this.
And then he was like, ooh, it looks like he might have been able to fit.
He did this years ago and none of us knew it.
Yeah. I think none of us knew it because he didn't get the answer he
wanted. Yeah, maybe.
What was I talking about?
How great I am at economics.
Why did that bring me back to my point? Donald Trump has ideas, and he's willing. He has the know-how, and he surrounded himself with some economically brilliant people that have said, no, this is going to work. And even if it's not the most popular thing, I mean, like, what are we going to do, poll test the word tariff? You poll test it, and they get the results, and they're like, oh, I don't know, not even the Republicans love it. And then so he starts saying the most beautiful word, tariff. It's like, people don't like it? I'll make them like it, or at least make them trust me. The American people were served with two options last time. One that was a little risky because they wanted to do big, bold things to identify the way we were headed as a country, to say this isn't sustainable. I don't know if what you know, you could think from the Trump administration, I don't know if what they're going to do is going to solve all of our problems, but I know sure as sugar that if we continue on the way that we're headed right now, it's going to continue to be a failure. We are careening off an abyss into an abyss that we can see full-fledged, eyes wide open. And for whatever particular reason, we're not going to try wild things to make a very drastic 90-degree turn so that we don't go over the cliff. Donald Trump said, we're going to go over the cliff. Donald Trump said, we're going to turn away from the cliff. We're going to try crazy things that we believe will work. And they have so far. There's nothing that this president has done this quickly in his administration that has been a complete and total failure. There's still time. Maybe it'll still collapse. But we have somebody in there who's willing to look at the heart and soul of America and give it back, which means taking government out of the solution to every problem and giving it back to the people. I'm so grateful that we're even getting to watch some of these other networks acknowledge inflation's doing much better under this president, and maybe that's even with real factual numbers. All right, a break right now. Will Chamberlain's going to join us when we come back, senior counsel at the Article 3 Project. We're going to talk a little bit about law and order, the president's willingness to go in hard. This is what he said, was it yesterday, where he said these people are committing vicious crimes and it's time we get vicious back with them? Vicious, that's a particular word. That's a choice. Will Chamberlain on the Annie Fry Show next.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The embassy in Ukraine called and said, we'll help you bring her home. And her family said no. They said she loved America. We're going to bury her here. So I think we can give her an America to be proud of. As Mr. Barnacle said, something here is broken, and we're here to fix it. We're happy to take your questions.
So there you have from Charlotte, the talking about this Ukrainian refugee who is murdered on public transportation. You know, we have a system set up where one political party very aggressively wants us to give up our cars and, live in walkable communities and put ourselves in positions where we can take public transportation for the environment. Well, what if the environment threatens your life? I mean, it doesn't seem sensible to be pro-crime and pro-putting all of these people in tight public spaces. The Trump administration seems to comment differently on it. And I'm looking forward to our next guest here. Will Chamberlain joins us, a senior counsel at the Article 3 Project, at Will Chamberlain on X. Welcome back to the show, Will. Thanks for being with us today.
Good to be with you, as always, Annie.
I wanted to ask you about this post you put on X here in the last day. There is an entire class of people who simply cannot conform their behavior to the law. They impose enormous costs on the rest of us. They deprive us of the ability to use public transport with our families. They can make downtowns unwalkable. And you go on, people can read the full thing there. But what I'm seeing in your post is the acknowledgement that common sense isn't as common as it needs to be. And I'm wondering how the Trump administration and the justice system has failed and where it needs to be fixed in order to give us the common sense safety that we citizens deserve.
So, yeah, I think J.D. Vance actually had a good clip from yesterday on Matt Gaetz where he made the point that the number of people that we're talking about in this class is actually extremely small, less than 1% of the population. But everybody knows them. And, you know, if you've walked down the street in a downtown and got screamed at by a crazy person, if you've, you know, felt extremely uncomfortable in a subway car because someone's just behaving very strangely and threateningly
at a Phillies game,
mugged or carjacked, you know, yeah. Any of this. This class of people is very small, but it exists and it does impose these enormous costs on everybody else. The solution is obvious. You put them in jail. You know, the jail is the solution. We had three strikes laws and for a reason, because people who are routinely getting arrested over and over again, the problem wasn't justice for the third crime that might have been relatively minor in comparison to some of the more violent crimes they had committed in the past. It's an acknowledgement that because you've demonstrated an inability to conform to the law, you need to be in jail to incapacitate you and protect the rest of society from what you might do in the future.
Well, go ahead.
That's the core thing people forget. There's a lot of different purposes to criminal punishment. Justice, deterrence are among them. But incapacitation is a very important one. The idea that a big part of criminal justice is simply taking people who are prone to commit violent crimes or prone to commit crimes more generally and saying, you are a danger to society. Even if this isn't about being mad at you or angry at you, this is about protecting everybody else from what you might do.
Yeah. And, you know, I wish that we could institutionalize. I feel like in our lifetimes, I'm 41 years old, we've gone from the obvious answer of taking mentally ill people and not throwing them in a jail cell with the people who are not mentally ill, but also very violent and criminal. But why would we have gotten away from that? And my understanding is in the Charlotte area that there were some super lefty NGOs that funded to the seven figures amount this idea that we need less people in our jails. Like, I don't even understand that type of quota monitoring of jails. Like, you have the amount of people in jail that need to be in jail, and that's that. But apparently not.
No, it goes all the way to the top of the state of North Carolina when Governor Roy Cooper in 2020, who's now running for Senate, by the way, put together a task force led by then Attorney General Josh Stein, now the governor of North Carolina, a racial equity in criminal justice task force. And you can look at the recommendations. They put them all online. It's a complete, like, it's every single Soros prosecutor, reform prosecutor, dream policy proposal you could imagine. End cash bail, end habitual violent felon status, reduce the use of habitual felon status so that, and basically every single policy proposal is tilted towards releasing more people from jail, releasing them from pretrial detention, reducing their sentences, preventing the prosecutors from taking those people who are just a fundamental danger to the public. Again, members of this class of people who have an inability to conform their conduct to the law and prevent you from putting them in jail. And so it's really rich when you have both Cooper and Stein posting on X that the problem, as they see it, is the lack of money, the lack of funding in their budgets for additional police, when it's the police who did their job. The police arrested these people 14 times. It's on you, as the people who are running the prosecutor's offices, to ensure that these people are put in prison and stay in prison.
Yeah, completely. Here in St. Louis, we know very well Kim Gardner, who is a Soros DA here, who's now been kicked out of her job. But the police here working their tails off in an incredibly violent area, putting their lives on the line. Like, I don't know how you could be married to a police officer. I don't know how I could send my husband out to fight crime that was never going to be prosecuted. Is it consolidated? You said this all goes to the top in North Carolina, but you're talking about the funding of things in North Carolina that we've certainly seen here in St. Louis, and it's been replicated across the country. Is there anything illegal about any of this? I mean, you can put your campaign dollars where you want and try to get people who think your way to get elected?
I don't think there's nothing off the top of my head. There'd have to be some sort of fraud engaged in by these people. But they, you know, to their limited credit, they were extremely transparent about what they were trying to do. They put in place people who they said, you know, we need reform prosecutors. George Soros even wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal explaining exactly what he wanted to do. He wanted to get reform prosecutors elected in major cities in the country, meaning people who would prosecute fewer people. And when he sentenced them to less time in prison, because prison bad, mass incarceration bad, it's too racist, it's not equitable, blah, blah, blah. There are too many black people in prison. And so the people who have committed crimes who are black people, because there are too many black people in prison, they need to be released sooner. And we've got it. And now there's a dead Ukrainian refugee murdered brutally in cold blood on a light rail train in North Carolina because the residents of Charlotte are too squeamish to say that people who commit crimes should be in jail.
I mean, we're speaking with Will Chamberlain right now. It's an incredibly political investment that's gotten us to this point. It doesn't seem like common sense, back to your post on X, that common sense is prevalent in any of it. At the very foundation of it is a very like a power hungry political argument that's being made. And you're talking about the people who are in jail. There's too many black people in jail. We need to get less black people in jail. I think a lot of people who vote to support these people have their heart in the right place. They feel like they hear something like that and they feel like that sounds good to me. Is the money that's being invested, are the people behind the curtain manifesting this crisis of turning criminals into victims? Is their heart in the right place too with what they're investing in? Are they trying to make societies better and it's just not working?
I think they have a moral inversion. I don't think they're evil by definition, but I think their morality is inverted. I think their care and concern is sort of pathologically redirected to the criminal as opposed to the victim who's no longer here to speak up about it. That would be the way to frame it. And it's the decision of the media and hard left activists who, you know, I think there was actually a very good podcast between on Megyn Kelly where Andrew Klavan described how essentially what the media does is it cherry picks a particular incident that is completely contrary to the actual facts on the ground about what the problem with crime is. Like the George Floyd situation was totally anomalous. It's not even clear there was a crime committed there, but you know, that's beside the point. That's an anomalous incident in the world of criminal justice, whereas an extraordinarily common one is simply the brazen murder of an innocent person by somebody who should have been locked up, who had committed, you know, like been arrested a dozen times and committed three or four violent crimes before they finally graduated to murder. And, you know, there was something, Whoopi Goldberg said something on The View today, which was just preposterous. She's like, you need to not politicize this. And the thing is, it is fundamentally a political problem because this isn't just an act of God. This isn't a random person nobody had ever heard of who had no record, who just snapped one day and killed someone. No, this is someone who had had enormous number of interactions with the criminal justice system and with the institutional care system. He had been diagnosed as schizophrenic, arrested 14 times, arrested most recently earlier this year. Thus, it's an avoidable crime. If our policies were different, he would have been in jail. It's very much like illegal alien crime. Illegal alien crime is avoidable because if you secure the border, the illegal aliens wouldn't be here. So I think the crimes like this, where there is an obvious policy failure that is a root cause of the possibility of the crime, those are the crimes that are political, and those are the crimes we have a right to say as Americans, we don't want to tolerate these. Yeah. We want these people in jail. This man should have been in jail. The fact that he is not is traceable to a policy failure.
Whoopi saying don't make it political means I know she knows that she's going to lose the political battle on this one pretty hard. Before we let you go, Will Chamberlain speaking with us right now, the senior counsel at the Article 3 Project. I want to ask you a little bit about, I don't know if it's lawfare, but the activist judges that exist. You know, really what we're talking about in Charlotte is a perversion of a justice system that isn't serving the people the way it should have been. And that's usually on a much more local level. But we continue to see the president implement things. Activist judges show up. So it seems to be a lot of the same names over and over and over again, some being fast-tracked to the Supreme Court. I just wanted to give you the opportunity to tell us what you're watching the most closely and what you think people need to be paying attention to.
I mean, you need to be paying attention to all these immigration cases. We just won a big one against a district court judge in Los Angeles who tried to constrain the way that ICE was doing immigration stops, saying that you couldn't use the fact that somebody's in a Home Depot parking lot speaking Spanish loitering as a reason to go stop them and inquire about their immigration status, when literally everybody in California knows. I don't know about the rest of the country, but if you were in California and you grew up, you know, group of people speaking Spanish in a Home Depot parking lot means you're likely to, that's likely illegal labor. That's illegal day labor. So, you know, that's a huge problem. There's just, I mean, there's been so many different injunctions and the judges keep going back that I don't have a particular one, but I would say go to judicialsabotage.org where we're keeping track of all these ridiculous injunctions going on against the administration.
Did you listen to Amy Coney Barrett's interview with Brett Baer? I know she's got a book coming out, so you kind of...
I didn't. I mean, she's been better lately. I think she was a little reluctant to step into the fray. I think she's still a little bit of a law professor at heart, but to the Supreme Court's credit, they finally got around. And I mean, the Trump administration is on an epic winning streak at the Supreme Court. I think they're basically undefeated every time they go up to try and get an injunction stayed or reversed. They're knocking them all out. And to the point that you have lower court judges complaining to the Atlantic that the Supreme Court doesn't have their back. Well, yeah, no kidding. Maybe you should, conform just like we expect criminals to conform their behavior to the law. We expect judges to conform their decisions to the law.
Yeah. Yeah. Hello, Republic. Meet the Constitution. Right. Loyal to the political. That's funny. Well, Will Chamberlain, give us that website again. You said judicial sabotage.
Judicialsabotage.org. And of course, Article3Project.org for all our other activities.
I've definitely got Article 3 Project quite a bit, but I'm going to check out the other one. Will Chamberlain, it's always a pleasure to have you with us. Thanks for the time.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. Will Chamberlain, follow him on X. There are some people who are on X and they kind of just, give willy-nilly opinions about things and they're in it. They're the people who are in the cycle, in the flow. Will actually thinks out loud on X, and I always appreciate his take because it's oftentimes somewhere in the lane, but a little bit on his own. It's just unique, and I appreciate that. So follow him on X at Will Chamberlain. Judicialsabotage.org, you said?
Yes.
I'm going there right now. All right, quick break. Ryan, come back. We'd like to talk to you again. The YouTube live chat poll for today. I should have asked Will this. Maybe I'll ask him privately. If the whole truth were exposed, whose exposure would you enjoy the most? Anthony Fauci, Joe Biden, Adam Schiff, or Barack Obama? Who do you want to know the whole truth and nothing but the truth about? That's the Annie Fry YouTube channel live chat poll. Go vote. We'll get back here and discuss it when we come back.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. How do you feel about this poll today?
I like this poll today.
You didn't give me any suggestions on names. I asked for them.
Oh, I missed that. Sorry about that. I would suggest, I don't know.
Who did I
Anthony
miss?
Fauci, Joe and, Biden.
Shush. If the whole truth were exposed, whose exposure would you enjoy the most? Fauci, Biden, Schiff, or Obama?
Did you miss any names? Is that the question?
Oh, I only had four. These are my four favorites, so I win.
It's not Schiff, but even though he's just annoying. He's such a gnat, and he won't go away. Although, let's see if they get him on mortgage fraud. Then he
I
might
think
go
he
away.
Knows way more. I think he knows a lot. Well, and I think he's been in... I think that the Bidens and the Obamas of the world have Schiffs to get stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that... And I just really detest him, so I'm a little on tilt with wanting to see Adam Schiff get his comeuppance. He's just such a squirrel.
I think I know how you're voting.
Yeah, Schiff.
He's not on my radar. I mean, he's annoying. I think he knows what he's been given and knows just that. I don't think he's really a major player, but he's such a slime ball. And
I think he's the stooge.
The stuff that he is put out there that's completely false, and knowing that it was false when he was putting it out just to smear mainly Trump, but really any Republican or anybody his way.
Do you think that all that stuff that he was doing was his idea?
I don't know.
No.
I have no idea, but he's certainly willing to do it.
I think that if Adam Schiff If we were to get the whole truth and nothing but the truth on Adam Schiff, it would implicate so many people, which is, I think he's the string you pull out that unravels the whole sweater.
I hope so.
I think Obama is his own sweater.
Because
I think Biden is his own sweater. Fauci is my second.
Well, here's the thing. They have a string on Adam Schiff right now. That's what's interesting.
And Fauci.
And Fauci as of now. Yeah. So that's interesting. Fauci's certainly up there for me. I don't necessarily want to tip my hand entirely if we're not going to give our picks yet and influence everybody. But
you think you're going to say something and people are going to flock to do that?
I think every time I say YouTube live chat poll, people are like, YouTube live chat poll?
No, they're not.
I got to go do that.
They come vote like 4 days later and they're like, I couldn't find the poll anywhere. And they comment. God love every one of you. You can go to AnnieFryShow.com and at AnnieFryShow.com every day. The current live broadcast is up there. If you click on that live broadcast, it'll take you to the YouTube where the live chat is, as long as you're listening noon to three and you can vote. It's just a side note.
The only name on, I mean, there's other ones, but the one that I thought might have made this list would have been Epstein, but there's so much baggage with him now that Democrats have now become allies with Epstein files for some reason. I don't, like, all of a sudden you could have done this for a long time and now, oh, it's a Trump talking point. Now I'm interested in it.
I think that the Epstein situation is bigger or separate than government.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Epstein thing is depravity. Mm-hmm. It's like a human rot that exists that has encapsulated a portion of our government power and influence. But I think it's one step removed, not smaller than, but one step removed from the representative government that we are supposed to have, the republic, if you can keep it. What are you Googling?
Rand Paul and all that stuff about Fauci, because it's going to break. Can I just read it? It says, breaking from Rand Paul, newly released emails show Fauci directed colleagues to, quote, delete this after you read it, unquote. Dating back to February of 2020, right when it was starting, and then he denied it.
What he wanted to be deleted was at a communication that he had sent that was trashing Mark Meadows for pushing back on Fauci. It was a power struggle. Mm-hmm. But I mean, what did Fauci do? How long did he know? Was he responsible? How much of what he said was a lie? How much did he knowingly make up? How much did he perpetuate? Are there people who are dead today because of Anthony Fauci? I think the answer is absolutely yes. Mm-hmm. And why did he do it? Did he do it so he could have money and power? He was the highest paid person in government. Is that crazy or what? The highest paid person in government, Anthony Fauci.
And the guy who wrote the book, The Real Dr. Anthony Fauci, is now the head of Health and Human Services. How the turntables. But the problem here is that delete this after you read it stuff, Rand Paul is saying the problem with that is that he denied doing that under oath.
Yeah, but he's had a pardon.
But he's got a pardon. So the question is, now what happens?
Well,
it's an auto pen too, right?
Yes, his auto pen pardon. I think it was Rand Paul himself that put this out. It might have been a couple months ago that said that the actual challenge to the validity of Joe Biden's auto pen will be through Fauci. He is the way, because they could prove that he lied under oath, and Fauci can come back and say, I've got a pardon. And wasn't his pardon like the others for any crimes committed? Or was that just Hunter? I can't remember. There were so many, thousands of clemency and pardons from Joe Biden's pen that was auto. But the idea that they have Fauci dead to rights for perjury, if he were to be challenged on that and Fauci goes, well, I have a pardon, then Rand Paul can say, well, we'll see about that. And then enter Supreme Court. And if the Supreme Court gets involved in this, that's going to be popcorn top tier stuff to watch and see. Because you want to talk about pulling a string out of a sweater and watching the whole thing fall apart. If the Supreme Court rules that the pardons by the Biden administration are null and void because the president didn't have anything to do with them, everything's back on the table.
Mm-hmm. Whew, man, you talk about a case.
Except for one that he did sign, which was Hunter's.
Well, that is the problem with the whole thing, is that he did sign that one. If he had done auto pen for all of them, you could make the case, oh, that's just what he was doing. But he signed that one.
Yeah. And then I know Hunter specifically, I think it was back to 2014. It was like for every crime committed.
When he bought the laptop.
What laptop?
Which wasn't his.
Just had all those naked pictures of him on there doing drugs and hookers. It's time to take
whose laptop doesn't? Of Hunter. We're in news. That's what I'm saying. We're just trying to follow the news. Download all the pictures.
I've downloaded.
I keep kind of digging here.
Is your computer the reason why this company has to keep doing tech stuff and reconfiguring everything?
I can't say.
How many laptops have you had to have taken from you?
3, 4.
Oh, no. I wish you'd have said 6 or 7. We'll be right back with Wiggins America, signs that it's time to kick your adult child out of the house. No, say it ain't so. We'll be right back.
Wiggins. Oh, Wiggins.
All right. These are ways to know if it's time to kick your little bird out of the nest.
Oh.
Your adult child. So we're not talking about a 14-year-old, Annie.
He's 15.
15. We're talking about an adult living in under your roof. How do you know when it's time to pull the plug and force the change?
I maybe have put that poorly. Do you look forward to when your kids are gone?
No, not really anymore. I'm to a point... I was thinking about this yesterday. When I had babies, I was like, I can't wait to get out of this phase. I did not like the baby phase.
You had twins first.
And the twins is probably why. But I look back on it, and everybody said, oh, you look back on it really fondly. And I do. Yeah. I look back on it now, and I'm like, oh, it was really cute. But I also remember what I felt in that moment. I'm like, I wouldn't do it again.
The baby phase for me, I loved it. I don't love the recovery from pregnancy part of it. So I don't know. Obviously.
That's my favorite part of it.
Probably not. I really don't know how a man would feel about it because you have like this abrupt, total upheaval of your life. A woman, like for me to not be pregnant, there's a huge upside there.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
I was like super pumped. People would say, oh, you're not going to sleep when the baby's here. I'm like hell I won't sleep. I don't sleep now because I'm so uncomfortable. I can hand that sucker over to my husband and go take a nap at least for a little bit if I want to. But the baby's, I mean, it's just a different kind of challenge. And it's really just the fact there are times where you think to yourself, it's never going to be like it was ever again. And then they move out and they leave you.
Now, yet they haven't. I like this phase that I'm in. I don't know that I would ever say, well, we have to hold this. I don't want to try to like keep it. But it's great. I enjoy it. And I would like the kids to be a part of our lives in whatever way they want.
Do you ever think that you wish you would have had more kids?
No, because of the way that we had to do it, because there was a lot of like medical stuff involved. Mm-hmm. There's just not a lot of second guessing.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
But you're content. You're happy where you are.
I mean, I'm not saying I would not have liked to have more, but it... There was no choice in it.
Yeah.
It was what it was. So anyway, getting your kids to move out, well, knowing when anyway, is what we're talking about here in Wiggins America. Step one is know where you are. The first task in moving your adult child toward independence is to assess where you are right now. Ask yourself, are you in a place where your boundaries are being crossed? Do you need to establish limits? Are you willing to allow your adult child to live in your home within those limits? Do you see your adult child as wanting to become independent? Is that something you could encourage?
So basically saying, like, if your kid wants to live at home with you while they're going to college, if they're working a job and they're coming and going, but they're not having to pay for rent, but they're kind of living an adult life, that cohabitation is a little bit more okay than mom still cutting the PBJs and diagonal triangles for them.
That would definitely be a part of that.
By the way, my kid's mom doesn't do that.
You don't make PBJ for the kids?
I don't make anything for the kids. Make your own food.
Really? Even for Molly?
No. Jaren does it. She can do it, or her siblings can do it. The amount of cheese sticks that girl eats is like record-breaking. Mom, can I have a cheese stick? Sure. Cheese stick and a yogi.
Mm-hmm.
Yogurt.
We do a lot of cheese curds.
Okay. Can't knock
equally
those.
Good. Step two is change your view. Instead of picturing your adult child as a little bird whose wings won't hold him up when he leaves the nest, think of him as fully capable of flying. Our emotions can cause us to be so afraid of what will happen to our kids that we think of them as children rather than as adults. Okay. I guess that one hit pretty close to home then.
Yeah. I mean, if there's one thing I could say is that the thought of them leaving is terrifying to me. But so was the thought of them driving, and Charlie's driving right now and he's good at it. And I'd be excited when he gets his license, or going to high school, or, you know, playing in your first sporting event. They were all like dreadful things to think about. And but then you get there and they just happen, and you're just kind of excited for the new thing. So maybe it'll be like that, too.
This one seems pretty obvious, but they might not be. Shut down the parent ATM. The key to launching your adult birdie is to make depending on you more uncomfortable than to launch. If you're in that spot, which if you're listening to this, it doesn't mean you're in that spot. That's just what we're talking about here. But if you have gotten to the point where your child seems like they're probably getting a little bit too old to live at home, or they're not seeking any independence, one way to shut that down is to cut off the money. Hmm. Last one. Enough is enough. Some parents have adult children at home who are abusing them verbally or even physically. This is the boundaries
hell
thing.
No.
You have the right to live in your own home free from abuse, intimidation, or disrespect.
See, if my kids turn into brats, I will physically use my foot to kick them out the door. Like, that's the thing. Like, you can stay here as long as you need to. But if, like, if disrespect sets in, I will tell you what. I have witnessed some kids, especially in the athletic world, when you're like, my son's playing sports, my daughters are playing sports, and I'm coaching, or my husband's coaching, or we're just around. Every once in a while, you see a kid who just pays no mind to their parents.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you never know what's going on at home. But I don't understand that. And, you know, maybe I couldn't understand it because I don't know the foundational circumstances. But if you're living off the fruit of the land and disrespecting me, no freaking way.
My kids saw a kid doing that in a store the other day, and they were aghast.
Wait, they're like, this is an option?
What?
All right, let's take a quick break. DeRoy Murdoch next.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.